Welcome, friends. Sorry for the late start. We're glad to be with you again. Thanks for being here. And Gabriel has some follow-up to last week that's going to be relating to biblical discussion and the situation in the Middle East. And I'm anxious to see what he can put together, and we'll have a great discussion. So welcome, Gabriel. Thanks for being here, and I'm excited to get into this.
Okay, thank you, Richard, and thank you, Doug. And I greet everyone with love and blessings, and the whole world blessings for world peace, where perhaps we're going. I like to believe that that's the case, although it doesn't look like it in the moment. Okay, so we're going to talk about the Middle East from a few different perspectives. Living in the Middle East, it's gotten a little hotter here. Just 10 minutes away, there's several rockets hit and killed seven 19-year-olds and about 40 other 18 and 19-year-olds who were gathered, kind of a pre-training meal. And that just happened. And where I live, you know, the booming and the falling of stuff is happening a little bit more frequently. So we're right in the midst of this fairly crazy situation. So I'm talking from that perspective. Okay? So, but before we start talking, it's always good to remember the truth of who we are, which is the big problem in today's world. We forget that we are divine beings. And so we want to do a little dancing to get in touch with the spiritual joy of remembering the deeper truths of who we are. And we'll meditate for just a little minute after that. So let's do it. Let's have everybody is welcome to dance. Okay, good. Thank you. Okay, take a moment. Take a deep breath. Let's meditate a little bit. If we have, you know, if you have a mantra, that's good. You just repeat it until your mind's quiet. Then you're in meditation. If not, here's a good mantra. It was given to Moses the burning bush. And Jesus also gave it to his disciples when he came down from the mountain. Yield an in-breath, hand the out-breath. One in-breath, hand the out-breath. Yield from the base up to the heart. Hey out to the heart. Wow from the base to the third eye, and then hey out to the heart. And you just keep repeating that until your mind's quiet. When your mind's quiet, you let go of it. And it means I am that I am. In the name of God is grace. Okay, so just focus on my eyes for a moment. Let the energy come through. Yo. And now in the meditation. And slowly come out of meditation. And now we're going to take a look at our topic, which is very ancient and in a certain way also current. How is it ancient? People have been, let's say, harming each other for thousands of years, okay? Because of our technology, we have more ability to create greater harm. They drop an atomic bomb and wipe out a whole city. Okay. So I want to get back to one small point from last week where it came up that, you know, the people who were involved that weren't following the one guy were considered lesser. And that's not really what the Torah said. It talked about sojourners. It talked about very specifically people in idol worship. Now, these people were considered enemies, but they weren't considered lesser. Because actually, the predominant culture of the time was, well, moving away from human sacrifice. When Abraham didn't sacrifice his son, Yitzhak, that was a shift. But it was still going on over thousands of years. And we should know that human sacrifice goes on, was going on all over the world. A real story. We were in Mexico at the museum there many years ago, maybe 45 years ago. And my daughter, who was very sensitive, she was maybe 4 years old at the time, she suddenly starts crying. Okay, what's the problem? So we go over, and she's standing in front of this altar, and she's just crying. And as soon as she gets away, she stops crying. So we check in. What is this altar? Well, this is an altar where they did human sacrifice, and they, you know, cut out the people's hearts and did these things to please the demonic gods. And I'm going to say that this is something that goes on, has gone on over the world, and I'm going to say these are demonic gods who are demanding this level. Baal sacrifice in the Middle East, same level, where the babies are being sacrificed. You know, they had a whole mechanism, and the parents get, you know, honored for sacrificing their baby. Of course, I don't want to take us into that, but clearly people who are against abortion are saying, well, it's a form of human sacrifice because it's the babies and the parents are offering it up. Okay, but this is going on. And then we can look at Hitler, who was a black occultist, well documented that he was a black occultist, and the human sacrifice he was doing, it could maybe up to about 12 million people or 15 million people that were ultimately sacrificed. So, and the black occult energy comes from. So it's not like a new thing. Our culture hasn't really let go of it so totally. And so we have, you know, we're slightly out of the dark ages, but we could fall into it pretty easily again. And really the point I'm making is that I'm an optimist. I think there has been some human evolution. So we aren't doing human sacrifice and we aren't really doing idol worship in the traditional way. Yes, idol worship, power, money, sex. That's another level of idol worship rather than worshiping an idol and sacrificing to the idols. So that was the point I was making. And these people were, the people that joined up Israel, they were called literally sojourners or people coming in from different kind of backgrounds, but they were also treated literally as equals according to kind of the Torah teachings, is that they're explicitly told to treat people fairly and as equal in all dealings. I'm just trying to make that clear. Now, and today we're looking at war all over the planet. We're looking at over 110 kind of conflicts, armed conflicts around the world. We're looking at Sudan with 500,000 people killed and Syria with a history recently of maybe that many, 500,000. We're looking at the Middle East. We're looking at Ukraine and Russia. Just a few of all the ones that are going on now. And it just seems like the world has gotten in a very dark vortex. I'm optimistic, and I like to think that from this will become a shift in consciousness that this really doesn't work. It has never worked. It's never, ever worked, you know, in any permanent basis. And the next move is more of a shift in consciousness. Now, the Essenes talked about it 2,000 years ago, that in 2025, next year, in spring, first day of Pesach, that there would be a shift in consciousness moving towards the 1,000 years of peace within the next 75 years. So we start, there'd be a change, and we'll be moving towards what we're talking about, where these constant wars are they're no longer accepted as evolved, but really degenerative. So that's the positive news from my point of view. Now, in the Middle East, sitting in the middle of it, as I mentioned, you know, having rockets like literally 10 minutes away, you know, killing people, and rockets booming, you know, and counter rockets booming, you know, as they get blown up. You're aware of this is pretty wild, okay? But I want to take it to a little bit different level. So we have Israel's position is we got at least five fronts going on. I won't give you all, well, just enough. You have Hamas, and you have Judea and Samaria. The forces are gathered there. They're being trained by Pakistanis to, you know, launch an attack. Israel's countering the attack, and it's not really in the news so much. And then, of course, you have Hezbollah, who literally has sent, and those are the rockets I'm talking about that we're about 10 minutes away from here, 26,000 rockets and missiles in Israel. That's a lot. 26,000 since October 8th. And it's all come out that there was a planned general attack, but somehow Hamas jumped the gun. I don't know just what they did. But they started all thing right away, and then people said, well, if you're just going to do your own, then you're on your own. So what? But then Hamas, since October 8th, you know, constant fire, and somewhere between 60 and 180,000 people have been displaced from their homes. At this point, for a year, Israel's feeling a lot of pressure to get the people back in their homes. People are very unhappy about that, and are very demanding the government produce. So that's part of what's happened now, is Israel's finally moved from defense into offense in with Hezbollah. And I believe, if I understand it right, when they pushed Hezbollah army back to the Litani River, that's far enough. It's like, I'm not sure, 25 miles, I'm not sure I have that correct, to minimize most of the short-range rocket attacks and would allow people to go back to their homes. Obviously, there's long-range ballistic missiles that go thousands of miles, like Iran's doing. And we'll see how far it goes. I mean, because the next step with Iran is a more serious level of obliteration, and they sent, depending on the estimates, about 150 to 200 ballistic missiles in Israel. None of them caused any problem. they're all destroyed and so forth, or miss the mark entirely. But that creates a response everybody's thinking about. So I don't want to get too much with the response and counter-response, but we have Iran, we have Hezbollah, we have Judea and Samaria, which is really important, and we have Hamas as part of a whole network of attack, okay? And that's not necessarily what's happening. That's the key message I'm saying, is that who's behind this? Why is this being allowed to happen? And it's a little vague, but we can look at, there's enough data to suggest, for example, that U.S. is funding both sides. I mean, really, this didn't really activate until Iran got, after October 7th, got $6 billion from U.S. as part of whatever, and that was enough to fund and activate Hamas, because it was after the $6 billion was, okay, we're sending it, that's when Hamas got activated. Okay. And then it goes on from there. So what role does the U.S. play? Well, they clearly, in many ways, are supporting Israel. In other ways, they're twisting Israel's arm not to do too much. Just stay on the defensive. The Israeli public is saying, well, that doesn't work so well. We're tired of being shot at. 26,000 rockets is a lot of rockets to be dodging. And so with a lot of pressure from the Israeli public, they're going into Hezbollah and into Lebanon and pushing Hezbollah back so people can get back to their homes and stop the rockets. So that's kind of a shift in the dynamic. Obviously, or maybe not obviously, but people should know that the leaders, there's a cycle of things that happen. They did this thing with the cell phones and pages. They blew up, and over 4,000 Hezbollah were killed, wounded, or whatever. And that really spooked things. So then people didn't want to talk to each other on the phone. Then they met, and then they found out where they were meeting, and the Israeli Air Force bombed where the leaders were meeting and killed the main leader, Nasrallah, who, without going into it, really had been responsible for the death of many, many people throughout many, many years. This is just one of those wars, okay? That being said, we're looking at all these forces going on, but behind that, who's allowing this to happen? And I don't want to point the finger at the U.S. as the only factor, because I don't believe it is. But I'm looking at Europe, and I'm looking at the EU, and I'm looking at U.S. and how they're playing both sides of it, although EU and the U.N. are more are anti-Israel, but U.S. is back and forth and remains, what people joke here, a frenemy, okay? And this whole play is going on, but what's it about? We have to ask the question, what is it about? If we get beyond polarities of good guys and bad guys, what is happening? And from a prophetic point of view, what may be happening is you're looking at this war, and maybe Ukraine and Russia too, as kind of leading to a one-world government. And that the U.S. and Europe and U.N. are playing out the agenda to create a rationale for a one-world government to take over everything, and somehow there'll be peace, which never works that way, but that's what the theory would be. So we step back and we look at that and say, okay, maybe that's where this all is going, where the globalists, you know, are with the strings puppeteering. U.S. isn't really a puppet, but it's playing out a role that's clearly aggravating the Middle East and funding both sides, where there seems to have a need for bigger intervention in some way. So I think that's how I assess it. Big picture, the people who will take advantage of this will be more of a globalist kind of awareness, which may point us to the one world government and using the Middle East and using UK and Russia as examples of why we need a one world government to do this. So Richard, any thoughts that you want to share?
Yeah, I appreciate your discussion, Gabriel. It's really insightful. And I spent decades investigating this exact topic. And, you know, who's behind it? Where's it going? What's the reason for it? How's it supposed to happen? What's the plan? And what can be done? Ultimately, the only reason to know about it is to see what can be done to undo it or prevent it. And what I came to, not saying that I'm an authority on anything at all. You know, we have to realize we're totally subject to error until we're totally conscious, and I'm not at that stage. But with the work that I did, when we say it's satanic, the plan for the one world government and above that, there are levels and levels. And the levels at the top understand things that their minions don't. There are corporate levels where it's about money and power. And there was a banker named Ronald something, I don't remember his whole name. He exposed that the globalist bankers were working in a satanic way to cause maximum suffering and death. If you just wanted to cause a one world government, you wouldn't have to go to those lengths. And they had ceremonies where it was all about suffering and death and destruction.
Well, they had, but they still do. It's ongoing.
Yeah, I don't mean to put it in past tense. And above that, though, I think what's going on is in relation to something you said, you were talking about human sacrifice. I think that the object at the top level, as far as I've seen it, of the satanic power structure, is a planetary sacrifice of all life. So it would be the ultimate sacrifice. And it's not, the ultimate objective is not world government. The ultimate objective is the end of life. And I think not just humans, but they want to destroy the biosphere. And it's not so that they can rule over it. It's so that they can get their reward on a totally different level that's not physical. And I think that's really what's driving everything. And the only way that I see to counteract that is for humans to reach a level in their own innate potential where the consciousness of God, not a religion, but a oneness, a connection, an experiential level of consciousness, is so powerful that it can transform the worst darkness into light. And that's our option. And we're in a time when we don't have a lot of time to waste to do that. And we have to take it from theory to practice. And it's the challenge is everything that we believe and feel is true about spiritual values and truth has to be manifest on the physical level. And it hasn't happened yet. There's been this nightmare going on for thousands of years. And in an individual life, the spiritual oneness with the source has to manifest in the transformation of the physical body. And in the group, it has to manifest in peace with impossible enemies so that there's a transformation of the whole situation. And when you look at the prophecy for 1,000 years of peace, I'm not talking about 1,000 years of peace. I'm talking about a transformation where peace is the normal permanently, and it doesn't slip back anymore.
But that is what the thousand years of peace means. It's a transformation of consciousness.
Yeah, but I'm not saying it. I'm saying it can't end after a thousand years. If it's real, it has to keep going up.
Well, there's more to it, but I'll settle with the first thousand years. We get to the next level, okay?
It does buy us some time, yeah. I just, my vision of time is that a thousand years passes in an instant.
Yeah. So I really agree. I mean, when we look at it, we're talking about satanic forces versus God forces as this constant duality is being played out, and it's reaching a peak, and the dark side, you're talking about bankers, you're talking about the global elite, they are actually doing human sacrifice. I know that for a fact.
Right, okay? And you mentioned abortion, Gabriel. I know we could spend hours on that, but right. Abortion is human sacrifice. And if you can't see it in the early stages, you can definitely see it in the late stages, no matter where you're coming from. And we had several states in the United States that have legalized abortion after birth. And it was being explained by the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, as totally acceptable, you know,
right.
Women's reproductive freedom or some nonsense like that. It's not the woman's body, it's the baby's body. And human sacrifice is going on right now.
For sure, but I want to say there are levels of it. And I'm saying the global leader practicing satanic human sacrifice.
Yeah, okay? you're right. They kidnap people and do that to them.
And it isn't just human sacrifice, but it's also cannibalism.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
These are real things that they're doing. It empowers them in ways that are just hard for us to understand.
It's a drug high.
Yeah. Yeah. Different levels, you know, that we're talking about. So we need to know the people in power, and I mean the royalty. I mean, clearly King Charles has been linked to this. And the royalty in general, it's very sad to hear what's going on. And none of this is new. I mean, I've heard about it for years. I've helped treat people who, let's say, weren't sacrificed, but were next in line and somehow escaped or participated and that totally freaked them out and they had to back out of it, which is very difficult to do when you're at that level. So this is really what's going on. And when we understand it, there is only one solution, which is to bring so much light in that it transforms consciousness. And that's why we have the peace meditation, or we have our own kind of, you know, spiritual practice, whatever that tradition is, because we are talking about a need for a massive transformation of consciousness, which I believe could happen. And so I remain optimistic in that the mind, you know, the monkey mind, is all connected, you know, and then there could be a major transfer of consciousness, you know, in an instant. And they have some evidence of that. I said the monkey mind because they show that it happened with monkeys around the world, around how they peeled potatoes or something like that. So it's all really possible. Our job is to keep awareness of that possibility and keep seeing everything we do towards expanding the consciousness for the whole planet, not getting into polarities, but everyone is a potential to wake up and do that. I'm going to just end on a little note. There's a community of Muslims and Jews that literally live together. I can't remember the name. I've been there once or twice years ago, but they've been going for 30 years, something like that. It's like a moshav, meaning their houses are together, their community center, they share, and they make a point. We may have different traditions, but we're all one. So they're teaching. It's really amazing place. I'm going to have to look up the name again because I haven't been there for a while. Is really oneness is attainable now because we're doing it. We've been doing it for 30 years. Maybe 100, maybe 150 families that are living together. You know, all their separate houses, but everything's kind of mini communal aspects. So it's very possible, and they make the point that Muslims and Jews can make this work living together. And it's a beautiful point. And so it's all possible. But it's good to know there's an example of that. So I'm going to turn over to Richard for a second, but I just want to bless everyone. I want to thank Doug behind the scenes and Richard and all of you for participating and showing up and listening to us. I do invite you to participate in the World Peace Meditation, which is every Monday. There we go. 6:30 Israel time, 11:30 Eastern, East Coast time in the U.S. We can do this. We can transform the world. And it starts with transforming consciousness. So please join us there. And also we have Peace 21 on each equinox and solstice, World Healing Meditation. That's how we transform consciousness. So I turn it over to Richard, and I send blessings of peace and love to everyone.
Beautiful ending, Gabriel, and sorry everybody for keeping you late, but it was really important to go over this today. This is like the bottom line of the entire situation. And as dark as things are, I totally agree with Gabriel that things can change in an instant. And we're walking around with potential we don't dream of. You're an incredible being made out of God, total beauty, joy, and consciousness, and capable of transforming the whole situation and being the spark that starts a chain reaction. And it's all very subtle. It's things that we overlook, but it's where your attention is. It's what you're broadcasting in your emotional state. You're carrying an energy field that you choose to live in and make that beautiful. And it affects everybody. It affects the whole planet. And it's potentially much stronger than any darkness could ever achieve. And the people who are lost in darkness are victims of it too. And they have the potential to wake up in response to what you do. So don't underestimate your own importance, your own power, not the ego nonsense, but who you really are. A spark off the original fire, like a microcosm or a small model of what the big part it really is. I don't know the words to adequately describe it, but your importance is without limits. And we're at the point in world history where it's the only option left, you know, to make what you believe into reality. The real aspect of religion is not what you memorize, it's what you become. It's your reconnection back to the source. And in fact, I think one of the Indian masters was saying, breaking down the word religion, and saying re again, religion to bind. And he was saying it's to bind your soul back to God, but not by memorizing all the tenets of the religion, but like was being demonstrated in Gabriel's example of the Muslims and Jews living together. You know, they're going beyond culture, they're going beyond religion, and saying the essence of love is the cure for the whole thing. So I'll stop babbling and just appreciate you for being here. Thanks for coming. Remember drcousins.com and treeoflife.mn.co. Also, we're still holding on to Planetary Healing Club. You're welcome there too, planetaryhealingclub.com. And everything is near a turning point now. And any little bit that you want to put in yourself could be the difference that changes the whole thing. So thank you for what you are. We appreciate you. And we'll see you next time. Take care.